Welcome to the show. I'm Chris Graham, and a little bit new format here for our shows, at least three or four of our shows a week. We're going to do something I'm calling Five Things, where I, or sometimes I, will have a guest, and we will talk about five things, and I'll set those five things out, and sometimes they'll be in that person's wheelhouse or my wheelhouse, and sometimes they won't be, but they'll be newsy things. And we'll always do a Today in History kind of segment. So I thought just a way to spice things up. On Wednesdays, we'll still talk our regular NASCAR podcast with Ryde Mullins. But five things. Wanted to jump in. And I used NASCAR to jump off to the first of my five things today. We'll talk about Bubba Wallace. As we're talking here right now, I got to look at my watch. It's 5:54 p.m. on Monday. The NASCAR race in Talladega Super Speedway is still ongoing. Was scheduled obviously for yesterday, rain delaying, in fact, pushing it back to today, scheduled 3 o'clock Eastern start today, and then more rain. And they're now in the second stage of that race, hoping to at least get half the race in so then it can be an official race. That's not the news. You know, the on the track stuff, we'll talk about that with Rod. We'll talk with Rod also this week about the controversies that have arisen. This week's NASCAR race was supposed to be a nice ease into new normal for NASCAR and for the sporting world. You know, NASCAR has been back since May, middle May with racing action, but for obvious reasons, no fans in attendance. Actually, last week's race at Homestead, they did allow up to about 1,000 or so selected folks to attend that race as fans. But this week with Talladega, the goal was to have 5,000 fans in attendance. You know, still a fraction of what could fit a Talladega Super Speedway. That's a 2.5 mile oval. But, you know, that's a big number here in this day and age. And so the goal had been, again, 5,000 fans. And but this was also going to be a race in the heart of the Deep South about a week and a half after the announcement by NASCAR that the series was going to ban the display of Confederate flags in and on its premises. And so no fans in the stands would be allowed to have Confederate flags waving, you know, theoretically down the road if the fans who are at the bigger speedways allowed to have trailers inside the infield area there, no Confederate flags. So, you know, you'd certainly seen some controversy. Rod Mullins and I talked about this the past couple of weeks, that there's a segment of fans that definitely are upset about this. Rightly so or not. this was the first test, if you want to say, of, you know, going into, again, the Deep South and with fans, you know, allowed and in the venue of that new policy. Yesterday didn't go well. Today, honestly, I have not been able to keep up with it as much, but yesterday did not go well, to say the least. No doubt have seen the headlines, seen reports, if nothing else, just a mention on social media of the fact that a noose was found in the team garage of Bubba Wallace's number 43 team. Wallace himself apparently did not see the noose. Wallace, and for those who don't follow NASCAR, Bubba Wallace, the series only African-American driver. In fact, there have only been 8 African-American drivers in the entire history of NASCAR, which dates back to the 1940s. And Wallace is the only current active top series NASCAR driver who's African-American. And so a noose found in his garage area. Now it's under investigation, including, you know, state, local authorities, and the FBI has been called in. I guess potentially a federal hate crime could have occurred in this situation. Very early in the investigation, we're less than a day. This news didn't break. I didn't see this news until late last night. Didn't get a write about it until this morning. The fact that access to the garage area would be limited theoretically to NASCAR personnel unless someone broke the security cordon, this could be someone involved in NASCAR in some way, maybe a crew member or something like that. We don't want to speculate on any specific identities, but this could be an ugly situation. And I wrote a column today about this, reporting on it, and then also then opining on it. Don't know that I see this necessarily being the only thing, unfortunately, that we'll see from this. And it doesn't look well. It's I think unfair on NASCAR, the racing series, the business, the sport. But there is a loud segment of fans who think that they've been led to believe that the display of the Confederate flag is somehow part of their heritage, and now they're taking this as an affront on their right to be able to be proud of their heritage. Unfortunately for them, what they're not aware of, and I think that they actually are, they're just masking it by being obtuse. But the heritage they're portraying is the Confederate flag, of course, flew for 4 years over state capitals at a time when those states had authorized the use of force against our federal government, with the issue at hand being the institution of slavery. So if that's your heritage, that's what you're choosing to represent your Southern history bona fides, then good for you. But you're picking a part of your history that is, you know, that celebrates the subjugation of another race. And since those 4 years, the Confederate flag has symbolized those 4 years plus the Jim Crow era plus whatever has been the case for the last 50 years in terms of at least the laws on the books are equal, but they're not applied equally. So we know where this is going. This is going to be something that NASCAR is going to have to deal with very uncomfortably for the next few months. But a great show. I did see this today with the stops and starts of the race. The drivers rallied around Bubba Wallace. In fact, the other drivers in the race today pushed his car to the front and surrounded it for the national anthem. A very nice, touching scene. And so, and Richard Petty, who's Richard Petty Motorsports owns the number 43 car, of course, the iconic number 43 that Petty himself drove on his way to all those wins and all those championships back in the day. Petty, 82 years old now, had not attended a race until today, since the COVID-19 pandemic, for obvious reasons. He's 82 years old. He's in that group that's most affected, at least on paper, by exposure to COVID-19. He made it a point to fly there today to Talladega to watch the race and show his support on scene for his driver, Bubba Wallace. So, this is going to be something that, unfortunately, that because the folks, the minority, sizable but not, you know, in percentage numbers, just raw numbers, sizable and very vocal, it's not going to go away anytime soon for NASCAR. Could be looked at as a winning moment for Bubba Wallace, just a couple of weeks ago, making the call for NASCAR to ban the display of Confederate flags at races, and then the quick turnaround, NASCAR a couple of days later, literally deciding to ban the display of Confederate flags at races. And it seemed like it could go quietly into the night. That's obviously not going to be the case. So, so there we are with that. You hate to see it, but it kind of is what it is. And we will we'll monitor the race course. Rod and I will break down the race, and then we'll break down the off the track stuff too when we talk on Wednesday at 5:30. Now that's when we're scheduled to talk. So I look forward to having Rod on the show with us then. Looking to see if there's any comments. If you have any comments too, just feel free to throw a comment down. If you have a question, anything else, throw it down there in the comment section on the Facebook page, mobile, desktop, whatever the case may be. And I'm glad to try to address any questions, concerns, anything else that you may have. Let's see if I can get the zoom back up. Well, yeah, there we go. Nope, not quite. Let's see here. I'll get it there. Maybe won't. All right. Well, we'll just leave it like this. Let's change. I mentioned my clumsy segue. COVID-19 numbers in Virginia. Let's look at where we are there. In Virginia, the numbers are good. Actually, the national numbers. You've certainly heard about some hot spots in some states: Florida, Arizona, Texas. We've been monitoring those numbers because those numbers impact us here in Virginia, at least in one sense. The reason it gets impacted here in Virginia is, we from a simply Virginia standpoint, are very much in line, ready to move to phase three of our forward Virginia reopen under all the numbers from public health benchmarks that we have here. You look at Virginia's numbers, hospitalizations from COVID-19 at a 3-month low today. 848 hospitalizations today, down. Let's see, I did the math on this. That is down. I thought I did the math on this. But the new reported cases number is down 57.2% from the May 31 peak. The date of symptom onset is down 61.3% from the May 21 peak of new cases. Our hospital capacity is at a really strong level. Virginia currently with 26.2% of beds open. So this is, these are all solid numbers. The numbers that aren't solid, the number of deaths attributed to folks in long-term care facilities, nursing homes, represents 62% of all the deaths in Virginia from COVID-19. And that number has been actually peaking here in the last week or so. I will almost authoritatively say that's not because of any recent spike in deaths in nursing homes. I'll be responsible, unlike most people in the media, and say just because reports are coming in today in the last few days in nursing homes specifically, doesn't mean that those deaths are happening today or this week or the last few days. Likely these are reporting lags that are just now being reflected in the numbers. That's the responsible way to report, and most media entities are not reporting anything near responsibly in this day and age. But that's still, whether responsible reporting or not, the number is 62% of deaths in Virginia from COVID-19 are in nursing homes. And so most of the deaths, more than half of the deaths, are among those 80 and older. 51.1% of the deaths in Virginia from COVID-19, 80 and older. When you look at the numbers for under 60, it's actually, these are numbers that they'll shock you when you hear them. The case fatality rate is 0.33%. Now that's just case fatality. That means the reported confirmed cases as the denominator, and the numerator is the number of deaths. When you use the ratio that the UVA Biocomplexity Institute uses as its model, and they estimate 7 unreported cases for every reported case, essentially people who are asymptomatic, never have a symptom, but they've had COVID. And that number could be a low number, but we'll use that number just because that's the number we have here in Virginia. The other serological studies have shown that in other states that number could be as high as 20-1, but we'll go with a 7-1. That's just the fair way to do it here, right? We're going to be responsible. And once again, most members of the media, you go a 7-1 ratio here in Virginia, and the infection fatality rate falls to 0.047%. And another way to say that, because that number means nothing. It's kind of like in the other direction, when you hear numbers, billions and trillions, when you talk about federal government spending or state government spending, billions and trillions, when you will never see anything close to that amount of money, doesn't mean anything to you. 0.047%, what does that mean to you? Well, here's another way to put it. Survival rate. So if the fatality rate is 0.047% for those under 60 here in Virginia, the survival rate is 99.953%. 99.953%. Had to repeat that for you so that could make some sense. So that's a pretty good number. That's for those under 60. I'm an under 60. And that doesn't even account for, again, that doesn't winnow out anything other than just age, 0 to 60. There are people who have comorbidities, the underlying conditions, asthma, diabetes, obesity, heart conditions for those who were, there are certainly those, the cancer, leukemia in the past or anything like that. That doesn't winnow any of those people out. That figure there doesn't winnow those out. You winnow those people out. Obviously, those folks are going to be more exposed. The survival rate for those who are relatively perfectly healthy, whatever that means, right? Under 60 would be even higher. I mean, not that it needs to be any higher. 99.953% is a pretty high number as it is, but. So what I'm trying to say with that is, and this is a number that is now, we're now 3+ months into the data set. This isn't a number that's, you can't dismiss it as it's a week or two, it's a couple weeks, it's a month, it's whatever. This number is not going to change in any direction, to all of a sudden there's going to be a spike in deaths among 0 to 60 healthy people. There's no reason for that number to change in that direction. And so I'll let you conclude what you want to conclude from that. Given that, it's not being reported, and that's a frustrating thing. Again, responsible reporting would emphasize this when you're talking about, and the reason I guess I bring this up is because when you hear about these cases, and we'll talk about Texas and Arizona and Florida, indications that younger people are the new, if you want to say epicenter, that sounds bad, but the new group of people that are getting the COVID-19 in those states, in Arizona and Texas and Florida. This could be something that could be a development that actually could be, I don't want to say positive, nobody getting an illness of whether, whatever the illness is a good thing, right? But these folks are certainly, the numbers right here tell you, I'm pointing right at numbers. I just gave you all these numbers. These numbers indicate to you that those folks are like less likely to be hospitalized, thus less strain on the hospital system. And these folks are less likely to die, much less likely to die. I mean, 99.953%. Now, I'll go the other direction and tell you that the over 80 population that I told you represents 51.1% of deaths in Virginia from COVID-19. The survival rate in Virginia for over 80 is 96.2%. That's a 3.8% death rate from an infection fatality rate standpoint. So that's a scary number, obviously. That's the number that we were told 3.5 months ago was the number from China, from Wuhan, China, where the first major outbreak globally from COVID-19 came. The numbers were 2.5, 3, 3.5, 4% based on what study you were presented with. And those are the numbers that will shut our country down, shut the Western world down for good reason. I mean, 3-4% of people who catch a virus die, even if 10% of people catch the virus. That's a number that's unacceptable. And then, of course, we were told it was going to be a much more contagious disease. Now we're seeing in some countries that were less stringent with their lockdowns or even didn't impose a technical lockdown. Sweden is the one that you hear about all the time. Where the population is now 15 to 20% exposed to COVID and it's slowing down. Actually, we're seeing the same numbers in New York. New York, very contagious back in March and in April. And now New York's numbers have not flattened, almost flatlined. And I think you're going to see I'm not a doctor, I'm not an epidemiologist, but from the doctors and epidemiologists that I read who are responsible about their presentation of this, they're saying that could be a sign of the disease having affected the most people it's going to affect in that particular population, and then it's going to kind of winnow out for a while there. So these spikes in Texas and Florida and Arizona could be, it could be that as young people are going back to work or younger people are going back to work, the workplace COVID-19 requirements are catching asymptomatics and those with no symptoms at all. There's been discussion of perhaps at least in Arizona and Texas that there's a possible influx of American citizens who also who live in Mexico deciding to come back. They may have contracted COVID in Mexico where they live. They're American citizens. They have the right to come back and get medical care. And they're going back to hospitals in the States for probably obvious reasons to get the care. And that would not be community spread. That would be a different factor. That's a speculation that we'll see how the numbers bear out the next few days and couple weeks. Those are a couple of potential factors. But again, you're not getting those. Unfortunately, you're not getting that kind of reporting from most of your national media sources. In fact, I'm not sure if I've seen any of that in any national media. You kind of have to really dive down to really do some numbers analysis to see where things are coming from there. What you're getting is the headlines getting you to click and get you scared about spikes. And it's just really frustrating to see, But that's where we are. COVID in Virginia, I don't want to say we're fortunate. I mean, Virginia has done a good job. We had a recent high in testing back on Saturday, on June 20th, 12,460. Tests were done per capita basis. That's just a huge number. If you compared us to California, we'd be around 50 or 55,000 tests done in a day. It's just, it's a tremendous number that what we've done there. And credit to the state for ramping that up. You know, the one thing that you could fault Governor Ralph Northam's administration for, and that you certainly wouldn't fault just them, you'd fault other governors too, policies regarding long-term care facilities, all the deaths there, maybe can't change it now. If there will would be a second wave in the fall or next spring, whatever that might be, they've learned not to house COVID patients in long-term care facilities. That policy in Virginia and New York and New Jersey and some other states obviously really spiked deaths. That was a dumb decision that won't be repeated in a second wave, whether it's COVID or another virus in the future. There will be a lot learned from this process, hopefully, that won't be repeated. Yeah, by and large, Virginia's done a good job. So credit to those in charge. Question from Scott Germer, actually a couple questions. And these are related. We'll go first to the long-term death of the nursing homes. Percentage of deaths in nursing homes compared to the general population indicate complete shutdown of the state's economy was totally an overreaction. Scott, I think we probably, you know, that could be a conclusion. I want to be careful about that because, to me, you're going to probably, the authoritative reviews of this are going to be a year and 2 years and 5 years from now when we have all the full information. We're still sort of refueling the plane in midair while we're flying it here. I mean, less than we were 3 months ago. And Scott, of course, contributed to AFP, and Scott and I were at the ACC tournament in Greensboro 3 months ago when the world changed while we were there. Drove back after that tournament got canceled and everything started getting canceled, right? Scott will remember that my commentary was already leaning in the direction of this is an overreaction, but it's interesting. I had no numbers and neither did the people who made the decisions to push us in the direction we went. My supposition was that China was fudging the numbers, but in a different direction than what we thought they were fudging. We thought they were underreporting deaths, underreporting cases. And it looks like they maybe were maybe actually making it look worse than it was. But we won't know that for any certainty for a year, two, three, four, 5 years. I mean, the studies about this will, I don't think we're going to like what we find out when those studies are done, but that's going to come out in the future. The other question from Scott, it's a good question. It's a sports question. In fact, I'll use that to segue to another sports topic. Do you think the recent number of positive test results from Clemson LSU have an impact on return of college football this fall? I'm going to put myself on the record here at 6:17 on June 22nd. And you know, anytime you put yourself out there, you can look stupid. But I'm going to say this, you know, I just gave that thorough analysis verbally. And of course, it's also on the website, AFP website, of the impact on young people of COVID-19. The survival rate 0 to 60 of 99.952%. Honestly, I've not done an analysis of 0 to 20 and 20 to 30, but, let's suppose that the survival rate, if it can be better than 99.952%, it's going to be better than 99.952%. And so that's a pretty high survival rate. I mean, I'm on the second floor of our Augusta Free Press headquarters here. I would be willing to bet it's not 99.952% that I get to the first floor after this show's over. My odds are slightly less than that to get down the stairs. So I guess what I'm saying there is, you know, you have the, I think it was 23 Clemson players. You have the LSU football team. I'm not sure the last I saw the LSU football team, they put some people in isolation, whether that meant that they had tested positive or they were just being precautionary, is something I'm not sure of. I would assume that, you know, folks maybe tested positive or at least had some symptoms, whatever the case may be. Actually, I wouldn't even think they had symptoms. I don't know that any of the Clemson players, for example, from what I've read, any of the players had exhibited symptoms. They were just simply tested positive because you're testing everybody now. That's what I think we're seeing across the board. You know, when people are going back to work, they're getting tested. Hey, you got COVID. I don't feel like I have COVID, but you got COVID. So now all of a sudden, and it's a smart thing. Hey, let's pull you out. Let's 14 days, you know, and then 14 days come back and you're fine. Let's not spread this any more than we have to, just in case. Honestly, maybe we should start doing this during the peak of seasonal flu in the future. You know, seasonal flu can kill 80 to 100,000 people in a year. You never hear about that, but it can. There were hospitals being closed 2 years ago, Southern California, Massachusetts, because of overflow of patients from that year's really bad flu season. You never hear about that, but you'll start hearing about that. And I think that maybe being a little bit more proactive then will be something that we should all do, not just sports teams, but workplaces. You know, we all have this work ethic we have of go to work sick and, you know, don't ever miss a day of work and all that kind of stuff. I think we can probably get around that now. I think we can probably, realize that just spreads things. And so, if in 2 weeks, Scott, Clemson, LSU, some other schools that have come back for practice or for voluntary workouts or whatever the case it is right now in the summertime, in 2 weeks, if you come back and the stories are Clemson and LSU as two examples, the two teams who played in the championship game last year, they had X number of players test positive. One of them had some flu-like symptoms and no hospitalizations and certainly no deaths. You know, that could be the kind of thing that can kind of give the sports world a boost. And honestly, if I had to look at the numbers that I've pulled together and have explained here on this show, I would say that that's where we're going to be. I mean, I can't assume that 3 months of numbers that we had 3 months ago, we had no numbers. Now we have 3 months of numbers specific to the United States that tell us that this is very deadly for people in nursing homes. It's very deadly for people over 70, over 80. And it's not for people under 60 and certainly for people under 30, under 20. I can't imagine that's going to change. And so in 2 weeks, I mean, if I had to predict, I would predict that you're going to end up, you're going to end up with the headlines being, sports is back and we're ready to play. And Scott's other comment as we transition to the next sports topic, is UVA still the defending men's basketball national champions? Yeah, they still are. To use the paraphrase from Ric Flair, the 16-time world wrestling champion, heavyweight wrestling champion, to be the man, you got to beat the man. And nobody's beaten the man. So UVA's still your defending national champions in basketball. As of right now, the Washington Nationals, of course, still the World Series champions. Hopefully there's some baseball. We're going to talk about some baseball here, actually. And what we're going to talk about baseball is quick. There's no news. As of right now, 6:21 p.m. now, as we're wrapping our show up here, no news from baseball. I don't think that's a bad thing, though. What I read was that Major League Baseball, the management side, owner side, yesterday presented some new conditions. Those new conditions weren't instantly leaked, which is interesting. But so much has been leaked back and forth that the new conditions that were proposed to the MLBPA, which led to the delay in the vote that was expected yesterday from the Players Association about a start date for the season, was delayed. So, we'll see. Maybe we had been told a date of July 19th to play baseball. Indications are that the players are working out individually already. They're going to need at least 3 weeks of a modified spring training 2.0 to get ready for a season. But, we'll see. We're going to be jumping on that story whenever we can, certainly about that. Definitely NASCAR being around is something that's really passing the time well. I've watched more Premier League soccer this weekend than I've probably ever watched. And I'm a soccer announcer in the fall for ESPN3 college soccer announcer. But, Premier League was on this weekend. They spread it out over 3 days and I was watching. I don't normally watch it casually. I don't usually watch a lot of NASCAR casually during the normal times of the year, but it's live sports. But if baseball comes back, it'll feel like something's really back. It'll feel somewhat like normal. Because this is a weird thing. I hate, and today's my birthday. And I'm not a big like look at me, it's my birthday guy. In fact, yeah, my personal Facebook profile probably got like 6 friends. I don't let them comment on anything about me. So my wife posted a Facebook status about today being my birthday. And apparently a lot of people have been wishing me happy birthday there. I haven't looked. I'm just not, you know, LinkedIn, kind of have to take my birthday off LinkedIn now too. I don't know. I'm just not a big, you know, wish me a happy birthday kind of guy. I don't know why, but the reason I bring that up is to bring this up. Usually on my birthday, we're doing something. We're usually at a Nats game, to be honest. The last several years, we've been at a Nats game on my birthday. The one year we weren't, we were in DC for a weekend of Nats baseball, and we missed the Friday night game because we bought tickets to see Hamilton. After we'd already seen it in New York and it was playing at the Kennedy Center. And so I suggested, hey, let's go see Hamilton. And so, and today, you know, kind of low-key, no Nats, no baseball. No Hamilton, even though, hey, I got to say, we'll talk about this probably on an upcoming podcast. July 3rd, I believe, is a date. It's going to debut on that Disney Plus, whatever they're calling it, that streaming thing that the Disney folks, ABC, ESPN are putting out. Hamilton apparently is debuting a movie version. I guess it's just a film version of the original cast production of that musical. And hey, that's something to look forward to. I wish it was tonight. Something to look forward to is that, and we'll I'm sure we'll talk more Hamilton because I'm a Hamilton trivia nut. I've only listened to the show. We've been to see the show live 3 times, and we've listened to the cast album from start to finish 15 or 20 times. Maybe that's an underestimate. I've read the biography by Ronald Chernow that Lin-Manuel Miranda used as the inspiration for the musical. 800-page book, took me a while to read. Then I found another biography of Eliza Hamilton and read that. So can't wait to see it. I mean, I've already seen the musical, you know, a few times, listened to it so many times, but still looking forward to that highlight of summer. So I'll use that as my segue. The last thing on our show, and I'm going to do this more regularly, what happened on this day in history, in addition to the fact I was born in 1972, and a shout out to my buddy, Mark Moses here. I turned 48 today. Mark, sent me a message, and, his message included, hey, in 32 years, you'll be eligible to run for president. I'll be 80 in 2052. I might be able to run for president by then. You gotta be old to run for president in this day and age. Hey, what happened on this day besides me being born June 22nd, 1990. I like looking this up because this will remind you some things. 1990, Checkpoint Charlie, the crossing point on the sector border between East and West Berlin, was dismantled. I was in high school. Actually, I guess I just graduated high school in 1990. And whatever reason, I was already a big foreign policy nerd, and this was a big deal. End of the Cold War, effectively, and an important signifying factor there with Checkpoint Charlie going down. 1986, Diego Maradona coins the phrase "Hand of God." There was a great HBO documentary out a few months ago that I watched on Diego Maradona, his rise and just awful steep descent fall. He was a star of stars in 86 in that World Cup, and that goal that helped Argentina get past England in the FIFA World Cup quarterfinals. Hand of God, yeah. he was a handball, but it's okay. You know, ref didn't see it. There's no instant replay, whatever. Let's see, what else? 1941, Germany invades Soviet Union. This is a weird one because having grown up with the June 22nd birthday, I remember seeing this and just thinking, hey, look, my birthday. You know, Germany invades Soviet Union in 1941. And I didn't realize this one. Catholic Church forces Galileo to renounce his heliocentric worldview, 1633, on this day, June 22nd. So, flat earthers there, if you want to say. Born on this day, again, in addition to me, Cindy Lauper, 1953. Gosh, Cindy Lauper is 67 years old. Man, we are all getting older. Meryl Streep, 1949. And here's one. This is sad. Deaths on this day. Man, some interesting people. Judy Garland, 1969. Fred Astaire, 1987. And this is the one that really gets me. George Carlin, my favorite comedian, died on this day in 2008. So that's sad. That's sad news. Well, I want to thank, let's see, were there any more comments or questions? Definitely an underestimate, Crystal says. We listen to Hamilton more than 10 or 15 times. All right. Yeah, okay. And that doesn't count the individual songs. I'm sure Crystal Abby Graham would agree that I have in different playlists. Don't get me started. I've promised or threatened, as the case may be, that when, you know, eventually in 20 years, when Hamilton is one of those things that you see put on at your community theaters, that I will be playing King George III in the Waynesboro production of Hamilton. I've already got the songs memorized. I'm working on the movements. Hamilton. Yeah, definitely more than 10 to 15 times. Okay, I'll concede that. Yeah, that's probably good. So thanks for the questions. Thanks for the comments. And we're going to try to do this every day again, at least Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. We're going to stick on Wednesdays with talking NASCAR specifically with Rod Mullins. But the other days of the week, we're going to do this five thing and talk about things going on in the world, talk about some random cultural things today in history, that kind of thing. And I would love to have input from our viewers, our listeners. So what I'm going to try to do starting tomorrow, if I can do this, is set a time. I wanted to set a time of either 3 or 4 o'clock, kind of decide that tomorrow, and then I'll kind of stick to it from there. But then when I now I'll announce it on Facebook, and I'll even announce what topics I'm thinking about for the day. And if you have questions or anything you want addressed, I'd love to get your input as well so that we can do this and have, good discussion perhaps as well. So anyway, well, thanks for your time today, everyone. I really appreciate it. And we will talk to you again tomorrow.